let us discuss about the first characteristic, how pure devotional service gives immediate relief from all kinds of material distress. Krishna. Trust us. Now I hope you can you all see this? Right, okay. Okay, so relief from material distress. This occurs or begins to occur on the level of sadhana bhakti. So Prabhupada, in the first paragraph introducing the subject, he's describing where distress comes from. And there are three causes. Actually, they're related to each other, but we can also look at them individually. The first is avidya. The second is material desire. And the sinful activities which a person does on the basis of their material desire. And then third is, well actually, this is called in Sanskrit, bija. These are related. Because of ignorance, a person engages in sinful activity. So actually the ignorance and the sinful activity are certainly very intimately related. You won't get sinful activity without ignorance. And then the third one is papa, or the sinful reactions. Obviously you won't get sinful reactions if you don't do any sinful activity. So they're all related with each other. But in the first paragraph, Srila Prabhupada talks about each one. They're operating really on different levels. So now there's a sequence in terms of how you get your reactions. And Prabhupada discusses this also in the first paragraph there, and in the second paragraph. Prabhupada saying that some sinful activities are mature, means you're getting the reactions, or you may even have got them. Some are immature, that the reactions, you've done the activity, but the reaction hasn't come yet. The second paragraph, you'll see Prabhupada says that mature sinful activities, that means you're actually getting the reaction, you're right in the middle of receiving the reaction. Then mature sinful activities are exhibited if you're suffering from some chronic disease, some legal implications, if you're born in a very low family, or if you're very uneducated or very unintelligent or very ugly like that. Then if you turn over to page 6, Prabhupada gives a little more detail. And we will give you even more detail right now. At the top of page 6, it is stated in Padma Purana that there are four kinds of effects. So the first we will list them out here. Number 1. This is called aprarabdha. And that means unmanifest, simply lying, dormant. You perform the activity, so the reaction will come. In fact, it's already within you, but it's waiting for the right time before it actually starts coming out and you start to receive the reaction. Then, Kuta. This is a slightly subtle one. A sinful tendency. Some inclination starts coming towards some sinful activity. Not coming to the point where you do it, but just it starts coming, some tendency. Then bijam. The actual sinful desire is manifest. And then prarabdha. Just misspelled this one. Sorry. So this should read aprarabdha. And this is prarabdha. Manifest reaction. So we'll give a little example to illustrate, which will illustrate these four stages. Which are related, of course, with the three items on top. So an example. A person does some sinful activity. And the reaction is that in the future the person will become a thief and be punished for thieving. But immediately the reaction is not felt. Even in this lifetime the reaction is not felt. But in the next lifetime, so that's the aprarabdha stage. In the next life, the reaction begins to manifest initially as an almost unnoticed tendency to steal, which then increases. So when it's like almost unnoticed, very subtle tendency towards dishonesty, that is the kutam stage. Then it intensifies, the reaction starts coming more from the previous activity, it starts intensifying. So the person gets a desire to steal, they want to steal. And they actually then start stealing. So around the stage where they really want to and they're about to start stealing, this is the bijam stage. Then the prarabdha stage, the person becomes a thief and has to take the reaction. The way it's listed in the Nectar of Devotion, perhaps not absolutely clear, sounds a little confusing. The effect which is already mature and then the effect which is almost mature, sort of like going back a step. So we would take it that the way, it's not exactly how Prabhupada has done it, but it's more like the editors have done it. They've actually mixed up number 3 and number 4. Number 4 on page 6 there should really be number 3. And number 3 should actually be number 4. It's one problem with Nectar of Devotion that the devotees who edited it did a rather bad job, so there's some parts which are a little difficult to follow. And then on top of that they lost the tapes of Srila Prabhupada dictating it. So it's a problem. Okay, so to carry on. Now there's a discussion from this point on page 6 going through page 7. The discussion is about how, if you engage in devotional service, then all your sinful reactions, everything is taken away. Devotional service is so wonderful. Devotional service is very amazing. Particularly, we just mentioned the time of initiation. Initiation being an important thing. So we understand that at that time, I hope you all got this now. Everyone got that? Because you, this is another thing you'll need to remember.
Lots of nectar.
Okay, so there's you, and then there's Krishna, and of course there's the spiritual master in between. So you have your sinful reactions, they're all piled up there, lots of them. Actually, a lot more than that, I guess. Probably more than would fill up the room, but it's just being represented by that. So then you get initiated, you take to devotional service, you're surrendering and surrendering, you get initiated and you're carrying on surrendering. So in the course of all this, and particularly initiation, all of this goes by the mercy of the spiritual master to Krishna. So now you become like this. It's all gone. Amazing. But where did it go? Did it just go sort of into nowhere? No. It went to Krishna. So now it becomes Krishna's. Not meaning that Krishna now comes under the weight of your sinful reactions, but Krishna, he's now holding those things. And he's quite capable of holding them and not being affected. So, there you are now, you're engaged in devotional service very nicely and nicely situated. And all your karma has been taken away. And it's in Krishna's hands. So then, why sometimes do you suffer? Unless some of you don't suffer. Do any of you not suffer? Perhaps you can teach me how. But why is it then, if you've been through all this, and this procedure has actually happened, and we hear so much about it, we've all heard about it, why is it that we're sometimes suffering? Well, the reason is that even though this great burden has been removed, it's a fact, but still, we are not yet on that platform of prema bhakti. In fact, when you're initiated, that means that you're really now becoming very serious about sadhana bhakti. So you're basically beginning sadhana bhakti, and you're certainly not on the level of bhava or prema yet. So that means that you, so many tendencies will still be there, so many weaknesses, deficiencies, prone to become attracted in the wrong direction, and bad behavior, and all these things, so many things will be there, habits. And Krishna wants you to become free from those habits. Krishna sees that there you are now, you're just offending a devotee because of your tendency to get agitated, tendency from previous lifetimes. So Krishna is not very happy. So what does Krishna do? He's holding your sinful reactions. So what he does is then, he lets you have a little bit back. Bang. Anyway, I won't illustrate it here. I was going to draw a stick figure, but I won't do that. Anyway, you just understand this point in principle. That Krishna then says, well, okay, so you're like that, but you shouldn't be like that. So now you just take this and see if it shakes you up a bit. And see if it makes you think a little more seriously about what you're doing. So in this way, Krishna sobers the devotee by giving little doses of the devotee's own sinful reactions, which Krishna is now holding. So it's not really that the devotee still has that great cloud or whatever of sinful reactions hovering over his or her head. It is gone. But Krishna is now using those reactions to encourage the devotee, as they say, the school of hard knocks. Sometimes you need to get shaken up a little bit, and then you realize that, oh, actually, such and such an activity is not good. I really should stop. Like this. So now, I'll just mention briefly from Madhura Kadamani, some of you may know, Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur there, he makes an analysis of how your anathas are removed. Start, when you come to the level of Bhajana Kriya specifically, which more or less means initiation, or at least the time when you really make a serious commitment to devotional service, that devotional service is my business and life now. So that's Bhajana Kriya. So then the reactions to your previous sins, that's that thing which was over your head there, which Krishna then took. Your previous sins and your previous piety, all your karma, on the level of Bhajana Kriya, the eradication is general. It means that most of those things are removed. You understand, I think you understand what the term general means. It's general, but it's not total. Because when you surrender, like at the time of initiation, you surrender, but there's more surrendering to be done also, generally. You make like a surrender in principle, but there are many details you have to surrender further on. So then he says, on the level of nishta, that means when you really become fixed in devotional service, then your sinful reactions, including your pious reactions, all your karmic reactions from your previous mundane activity, it's completely removed when you become fixed. So he's making a little distinction between Bhajana Kriya, or that time of initiation, or the time of making a real commitment. He's making a little distinction between that and then a little more advanced stage where you are really fixed. So between Bhajana Kriya and Nishta, your karmic reactions are generally removed and then finally completely removed. Now, of course, when you take to devotional service, before you take to devotional service, you can't make mistakes in devotional service because you're not doing devotional service. So when you start doing devotional service, then you can start making mistakes in devotional service. And there are consequences to those, which do produce distress. They produce distress, although it's not exactly your karma in the terms that we were talking about, bija, kuta, and parabdha and all that. But they definitely produce distress. So, anathas, or the reactions to performing devotional service in like an innocent, foolish way, just making mistakes, not really being offensive, but just making errors. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that on the level of Bhajana Kriya, the eradication is limited, quite small. Because you just started making your mistakes. And so you certainly haven't learned how to stop making them so much, because you just started. But on the level of nishta again, same as with your previous your karma from your previous activities, the reactions to your mistakes in devotional service are completely removed. Because when you come to the level of nishta, then you're fixed in devotional service. And when you're fixed, you're not making any more mistakes. It just sort of follows in the definition of being fixed nicely in devotional service, that you're doing everything basically correctly. So therefore you're not producing, there's no more distress coming from your mistakes. And nishta is within the umbrella of sadhana bhakti. In fact, everything up to asakti. Are you all familiar with these terms? I think you should be. Yeah. Asakti means attachment. You start with shraddha, sadhu, sangha, then bhajana kriya. You get a little faith, you associate, then you become committed. Then anatha nivritti, you work on getting free of all those unwanted things, all your mistakes, all your sinful tendencies. You work on getting free of those. Then you come to nishta, you are basically free. So therefore, as we've been reading here, there's complete freedom from the reactions to your karma and the reactions to your mistakes in bhakti. Then from there you go to ruchi, being so fixed you get a very nice taste, and then on the basis of the taste you get very deeply attached to Krishna. So this is all within sadhana bhakti. And then when you're so attached to Krishna, then bhava bhakti starts to come. And bhava bhakti is outside of sadhana. Right. So the point one, I mean there's a number of points here. Oh, regarding, there's another class of anatha. The anathas which arise from offenses, they're more serious. When you come to the level of nishta, your reactions to your offenses are not quite generally removed, less than generally removed. In other words, they're still there. They're noticeably there. When you come to the level of bhava, then there's general eradication. On the level of prema, there's complete eradication. And when you finally enter your eternal relationship with the Lord, there is what is called absolute eradication. Not even a hint of a trace. In fact, our acharyas have explained that in one sense, the difference between bhava and prema is that on the level of bhava, all other bad things are gone, but there's still some traces of the effects of your aparadhas. Therefore, you're only on the level of bhava and not on the level of prema. Okay. So just to conclude about distress, because all these things cause distress. Your karma produces distress. When you make mistakes in bhakti, it produces distress. When you commit aparadhas, it produces distress. But sadhana bhakti, if it's done very nicely, will give relief. It'll give very nice relief, actually. So, Prabhupada concludes this particular section about the relief from material distress by contrasting the effects of devotional service with the effects of material activity, or material activity which is intended to offset distress which you're due to get. There's a process, karma kandiya process, called prayaschitta. Prayaschitta. And it means atonement. Can you read my writing?
Yes.
I don't know if I'd make a school teacher, but anyway. There it is. So there is a karma kandiya process. That if you do something, you hurt someone, or you kill someone, or you do something like that, sinful activity, then you can offset it by doing some sort of ritualistic sacrifice or something. I don't know exactly what, but there's some process to atone. So, in the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam, there's a discussion between Shukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Parikshit. And in order to test Maharaj Parikshit, Shukadeva suggests that maybe if you want to get free of sinful activity or sinful reactions, maybe you can just do prayaschitta and then it'll be all right. But then Maharaj Parikshit, he understands, oh, I'm being tested. And he says, no, that's not possible. I won't really escape the reactions, because the seed, meaning my desire to enjoy independently from Krishna, will still be there. So even if I do atone for some certain particular sinful activity, and that goes, but because the seed of sinful desire is still there, I'll commit more sin in the future. So therefore I'm not going to get out of the whole process of suffering. And he gives the famous example of the elephant bathing, which in fact is referred to here on page 7. And I'm sure you all know that example. The elephant, feeling dirty, goes and bathes and sprays water all over and so on. Then comes out and thinks, gosh, I'm very wet, I must get dry. And so he rolls in the dust. And then again, he's basically as dirty as he was. So Prabhupada is explaining that this process of prayaschitta is like that. You get dirty, you get contaminated, sinful reaction. So you do prayaschitta, you get cleansed. But then you come out, and then you get involved in the same procedures again. Because the seed, that which led to the sinful activity from which you got the reaction, that seed is still there. But bhakti actually removes these things altogether. Therefore, as the heading says, it gives release, it gives relief from all types of material distress, even sadhana bhakti. Even, I mean, particularly your karmic reactions, but even your aparadhas. By the time you get up to the level of bhava, the reactions to your aparadhas are generally removed by your sadhana bhakti. So it's very effective for relieving one from distress. Okay. Any comments or questions so far? Mm-hmm. Well, initiation means to begin. Initiate means that you begin. So certainly it's a very big commitment and a big surrender that you're making that agreement or taking those vows. So that's a big surrender. And if, you know, it depends, it's not just a matter of formality, it depends within the heart whether one, to what degree one really surrenders. Just at that moment, one may come to the level of nishtha, actually, if one really surrenders at that time. So therefore, you know, we're saying initiation, but it's not exactly specifically that on, you know, on such and such a day, whenever it was, Janmashtami day 1994, at 11 in the morning, all my sinful reactions just went at the very moment I was initiated. Initiation is like a landmark in the process. But of course the idea is actual surrender. It's not just like rubber stamp, I'm initiated. And Krishna thinks, oh right, I must take all the sinful reactions now. It depends on the degree of surrender. But the process generally begins in real earnest at the time of initiation. At the time of making that real commitment. So as we mentioned from Madhurikadamani, your karmic reactions at the point of Bhajana Kriya are generally removed. So actually that it's a very significant thing, a general removal. There's still some pieces there, and they're only completely removed at the time of Nishtha. But still, you know, at that time of Bhajana Kriya or initiation or making that initial commitment, so much is removed, that's the fact. And in a sense, the process of initiation is an ongoing process. This is one explanation given by our acharyas, that diksha does not mean, like I said, on Janmashtami day at 11 o'clock, diksha occurred. So then at 1 o'clock it was no, you know, it had finished. Actually, just like siksha, you get siksha every day. So diksha is also an ongoing process of connection. which deepens and deepens as one surrenders. Yeah. So, anyway, that's the basic idea. Is that okay? Yeah, he takes them, and he's telling the story of Mother Yashoda with Krishna with the milk, and how it was favorable. One other part of the favorable nature of that pastime is that Krishna includes his devotees and actually his personal paraphernalia, or tadiya. We use that term, tadiya. Those things which are intimately connected with the Lord. So in that pastime, Mother Yashoda went to tend to the milk that was boiling over. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that the reason the milk was boiling over was the milk actually is alive. Milk is not just a white liquid as we know milk, but the milk was actually a living entity and a devotee. And the milk was sitting in the pot watching Mother Yashoda breastfeeding Krishna, and the milk was thinking that, oh, he's going to drink her breast milk and be satisfied, he won't want any more, and then how am I going to serve him? I want to serve Krishna. So therefore he made this very intelligent plan to interrupt the breastfeeding of Krishna, and he started boiling over, like, voluntarily. And so then Mother Yashoda had to go and save the milk, which she managed to do. And then later the milk was fed to Krishna. So Krishna was satisfied, directly and indirectly, because the milk was satisfied also. As a pure devotee of Krishna, the milk was satisfied in that in the end, he or she, I don't know if it's he or she, but the milk was offered to Krishna. And so the milk was very happy, doing his or her devotional service. Then, regarding this last thing we just discussed about how pure devotional service gives immediate relief from all material distresses. So, we mentioned that distress comes from mistakes you make in bhakti and aparad. So, mistakes you make in bhakti and aparads are not exactly material. They fall in a different category. Material distress means, as we were discussing, as Prabhupada discusses for most of the section there where he's talking on the subject, it means to do with your sinful activities and your sinful reactions and so on. Although it is a fact, certainly, that distress comes from your mistakes in devotional service and your aparads. But particularly, your material distresses from your material activities and the reactions thereof, as we read from Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur, all the reactions to your previous material activities, pious and impious, they are eradicated at a general level on the level of bhajana kriya, and completely on the level of nishta. And those two, bhajana kriya and nishta, are very much within the realm of sadhana bhakti. So pure devotional service on the level of sadhana bhakti gives relief from all material distresses in the sense of your karmic reactions and so on. And not only that, it also gives relief from the effects of your mistakes in devotional service, and it gives a very significant amount of relief from the effects of your aparads. But certainly it gives complete relief from all your material reactions. Just sadhana bhakti, what to speak of bhava bhakti. So I hope that's clear. So now we'll discuss about how Krishna consciousness is all auspicious. Again, this is on the level of sadhana bhakti, or at least it appears on the level of sadhana bhakti. There's a definition. Srila Prabhupada cites Srila Rupa Goswami, the very first couple of sentences of this section on page 8. Srila Rupa Goswami has given a definition of auspiciousness. He says that actual auspiciousness means welfare activities for all the people of the world. And so what is that? What sort of welfare activity would actually help everyone? Krishna consciousness. Not, he mentions the United Nations. United Nations theoretically is meant to be trying to help everyone to improve their lives, but they fail. They have failed, and they are continuing to fail to do that because they don't have the right formula. It's a mistaken attempt. But if we spread Krishna consciousness all over, then everyone will be benefited, because everyone will get out of material existence altogether and go back to Godhead. So that is certainly the greatest benefit. All problems solved, and everyone will be very happy. So then, there are actually three sort of aspects to auspiciousness. And we've written those up on the top here. There's two lots of three, you'll see. So the top lot, 1, 2, and 3 right at the very top, those are the three features or aspects or qualities of auspiciousness. It benefits everyone. If it's all auspicious, which is what is being stated, Krishna consciousness is all auspicious. Not just auspicious for some, but not for others. So it's all auspicious because it can benefit everyone, not just a few. It can also attract everyone. And if you look on the bottom of page 8, going over that paragraph, which then extends over to the top of page 9, Prabhupada is giving the example of how when Lord Chaitanya went through the Jarikanda forest, even the animals were attracted to Krishna consciousness. So Krishna consciousness attracts everyone, even beyond the human beings. Therefore it's all auspicious. And thirdly, it produces good qualities in everyone, actually. And Prabhupada discusses that on page 9, then going over to page 10, basically. In fact, quite extensively he's discussing this aspect of it, how it produces good qualities. From the paragraph up the top there where it says, furthermore, a person engaged in Krishna consciousness, acting in devotional service, can develop all the good qualities that are generally found in the demigods, from there to the end of this section. Prabhupada's talking about how it produces good qualities. And in here, Prabhupada makes the point that some people go to university to improve themselves and become very qualified and expert. But even if they have a PhD, they may still have many bad habits. So all their education hasn't really produced good qualities, just some technical know-how or something of that sort, but not actually helped one on a personal level to improve yourself. But then Prabhupada says that a Krishna-conscious person, even if they don't go to university, they may just have dropped out of high school, but if they're sincere in devotional service, then they become saintly. Because Krishna consciousness is all auspicious and it produces good qualities. So that's the basic understanding as far as all auspiciousness is concerned. Then as far as, now we're moving on to the third characteristic, that pure devotional service immediately puts one in transcendental happiness. This is really related to bhava bhakti. On the level of sadhana bhakti, there's certainly some happiness. And compared to material happiness, it's very, very nice. But a very elevated quality of pure transcendental happiness That really comes in bhava bhakti, because bhava, as we mentioned yesterday, means what? Ecstasy. Ecstasy, real ecstasy. So then Prabhupada explains, and we've listed it out here, that there are three types of happinesses. Which are not Krishna conscious, at least. And actually, we could even restate it perhaps. If you look on page 10, the first paragraph, Prabhupada has actually, he's actually combined material enjoyment and sense gratification as being one. So let us just alter what we've written on the board. So one type is from sense gratification, which includes mystic powers. Next is from liberation, and then from devotional service. Okay, so Prabhupada, in the third paragraph in this section, he makes the main distinction between these different types of happiness. Happiness from pure devotional service is the highest. Why? Because it's eternal. Whereas both the material happiness and the happiness of liberation, they are temporary. Prabhupada then goes on in the next paragraph, which goes over to page 11 also. He then talks about how this impersonal happiness of liberation is not so good, and how it's temporary, in that we see that the impersonalists, even the big popular impersonalists who are well known, but in so many cases, they fall down, if not into gross sense gratification, but at least into mundane philanthropic work and activities in the mode of goodness, like the famous Arya Samaj. They are impersonalists. Philosophically, Swami Dayanand was an impersonalist, and a very heavy impersonalist. But we see here the Arya Samaj, what are they? Basically, they are old age homes, and that is about as far as they go, really, and a few rituals here and there. But mainly they're old age homes. So they're meant to be impersonalists. They're meant to be like real Mayavadis, actually. But because it's very hard to, because you don't really get so much happiness from that, therefore they've come down to the mode of goodness. Then Prabhupada talks on page 11, going, it's quite a lengthy description, we won't go into the whole thing. Over onto page 12, about two-thirds of the way down, all about mystic powers. Different types, eight types of mystic powers, but they won't give you real happiness. And in order to establish the point, Prabhupada refers on page 11, if you look at the paragraph, it's starting about halfway down the page, after comparing all these mystic yogic cities. Prabhupada refers actually to one of his godbrothers, a German scholar. He actually came to India in order to investigate all these yogic powers. He was very attracted. But then he realized, he saw mystic yogis doing their different mystical things, and he realized that actually the material scientists are able to do many of these things by gross material means. So then he realized that this is not such a high thing. It's just a subtle way of doing ordinary material things, more or less. So then he started looking for something which is really higher, and then he became a devotee, and he became a disciple of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So in this way, Prabhupada is establishing how all these yogic cities, which he is describing also in some length, how they're just not as good. They don't produce the happiness of devotional service. Then he goes on to talk about, bottom of page 12, about how just ordinary sense gratification also doesn't produce so much happiness. In fact, it tends to produce disaster. These people they have no hope of being liberated from this catastrophe. So all their sense gratification, what to speak of not giving them happiness, is actually leading to catastrophe. And then Prabhupada talks about, on page 13, about halfway down, gives an example of one devotee who, by material standards, had nothing. Kolavecha Sridhar. Whatever he had, he would give away. He was living in poverty. But because he was a pure devotee, he was very, very happy. And he just had no interest in accumulating anything material or anything of that sort, liberation. He just wanted to be a devotee. So in this way, Prabhupada, Rupa Goswami, they're establishing that the happiness of pure devotional service eclipses the happiness of materialism or impersonal spiritualism. So that's as far as we'll go today. Anyone have any comments or questions on that?
I was just wondering how Mother Yashoda preacted devotional service in such a short
period. Well, I mean, that may be like a touchy point, because it could bring up emotional types of issues. But it may be a good question. I mean, it may lead to the question of if they did. I mean, it's a little hard to say what level they were on.
Like, in order to go back to God, one has
to ask. Yes, well. Were they on the level of pure devotional service? Well, we can certainly hope. Prabhupada, when Jayananda left his body, Jayananda was glorified by Srila Prabhupada on numerous occasions while he was living as being a very, very advanced devotee. And he showed the symptoms of that in his devotional service. He was a most remarkable devotee. Very, very high standard of devotion and dedication. So when he passed away, Prabhupada wrote a posthumous letter to him. He was already dead, but Prabhupada wrote a letter to him to instruct us, actually. And Prabhupada was explaining that. I heard that when you left your body, you were hearing Hare Krishna Kirtan and like that. So therefore, I think, or I hope, that so if this is really the case, then perhaps you have gone back to Godhead. Then Prabhupada says that if somehow or other you were not able to maintain that Krishna consciousness so nicely at the time of death, then at least you'll have gone to the heavenly planets, and then in some time in the future you'll continue on, and then you'll go back to Godhead before long. So Prabhupada was saying that about Jayananda, who really was a very advanced devotee, actually. In fact, I remember, you know, Jayananda only became famous after he died, really, like internationally famous amongst the devotees. But I remember in 1976, one of the leaders of the Radha Damodar party coming over, Yogesh Chandra, and he was a very senior devotee, and he was telling us about this devotee, Jayananda, who we'd not heard of. He was not known. But he was telling us that this devotee, Jayananda, is most amazing devotee. So it appeared that you know, not just in relation to his dying, but just generally, he was a very, very advanced devotee. And Prabhupada, so Prabhupada said that when he died, that, you know, perhaps you've gone back to Godhead, if everything, conditions were favorable and you were able to maintain Krishna consciousness, then perhaps that. But if not, then at least you'll go to the heavenly planets, and then you'll continue on later with your devotional service, and you'll go back then. So, you know, Mother Yashoda Priya and Mother Acharya, you know, on an emotional level, it's very nice to think that they went back to Godhead, and they may have, because the devotees were there and trying to, you know, infuse Krishna consciousness into them very intensely. And I'm sure they were also very conscious and trying to be Krishna conscious. So we certainly hope that they went back to Godhead. Whether they did, I don't know. Prabhupada didn't claim to know that, you know, Jayananda went back to Godhead. So it depends. You know, it's by their symptoms up to the point, say, like shortly before they left their bodies, by their symptoms, they were nice devotees. They weren't the most advanced devotees. They were nice devotees. You know, perhaps those last few months had such an effect that, you know, it just drew Krishna consciousness out of them in a particularly deep way. But I think it would be, other than making theoretical types of statements, I think it would be very hard for someone to say, like, one way or the other, that they did or they didn't. But whatever happened, we can be sure that, you know, because of the best wishes of the devotees which were there, the good wishes of all the devotees, and because they were devotees and they were very sincere devotees, that, you know, at the very least, they'll be continuing on with their devotional service, and sooner or later they'll go back to Godhead. So nothing is lost. At worst nothing is lost, and at best they may have gone back to Godhead. Some other comment or question? Yes, that's very nice. So Prabhupada said that, then he also wrote that letter. So he may well have gone back to Godhead, because he was a very advanced devotee. That's the first point. He was very advanced. And then, you know, with this, making that special effort at the time of death and all the devotees trying to help, so maybe. All right. So please write your little summaries on chapter 2. And we'll continue on tomorrow at 10:30 here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Okay. And I'll just repeat that the way you did the other assignments about Bhakti Rasa, on the whole I thought it was very nice, so keep up the good work. And you'll all pass. While we're at it again, we might as well give you your assignment for tonight. And you have the whole weekend. Oh, so it'll be very easy. So you probably could guess that we want you to do the same thing, write a summary in the same way. This time of chapter 3. It's not long, it's only six pages, so quite short. Same idea, couple of sentences about each page or so. Don't make it too brief. Try and include all the main ideas which are there on each page. If you start abbreviating too much, then you'll lose some of the meaning. And on top of that, we'll have a little test on Monday. Very little. Actually, what we'll do, we'll ask you to learn 3 verses. So those verses are, they're 3 specific verses. The verse from the first chapter, from the introduction of Nectar of Devotion. The Parivasa Sutra and Yabhilashitashunyam. So learn the Sanskrit and just the translation. You don't need to learn the word for word. So that's one. Then from these verses that we've just given you just now, learn the first 2. The definition of sadhana bhakti and the definition of vaidhi bhakti. And on Monday we'll see. Hopefully it's not too much for you. We don't want to overburden you. But if we can do like this, it would actually be very nice. So try. So is everyone clear on what we're looking for? Anyone not clear on what we want? Yeah. The Sanskrit and the English. Yeah. For the Anyabhilashita Shunyam verse. And then the first 2 verses from this list from chapter 2 which we've just given out. I think many of you already know that Anyabhilashita Shunyam verse, isn't it? How many of you know that verse? More or less? A fair number of you. Okay. Alright, so let us begin with a little kirtan. Do we happen to have a madanga or not today? Jayaraja. So is everyone clear about the homework and everything? Everyone is clear? No questions? All right. So let us carry on and we'll finish the first chapter. The last 3 characteristics of pure devotional service. As we discussed yesterday, pure devotional service gives immediate relief from all kinds of material distress. Pure devotional service is the beginning of all auspiciousness, and pure devotional service automatically puts one in transcendental pleasure, which is better than material pleasure, and better even than the pleasure that people who are striving for liberation experience. So the first 2 characteristics arise on the level of sadhana bhakti, devotional service and practice. And the 3rd one that we discussed yesterday arises on the level of bhava. So now the 4th, which is that pure devotional service is really achieved. This arises, or this idea relates to bhava bhakti also. In other words, devotional service beyond just the stages of practicing and learning. Devotional service basically on the platform of perfection in this regard. You all know this word sadhana, practice. Then there is sadhya. perfection, that which is achieved through the practice. So Bhava Bhakti and Prema Bhakti, they're both within the realm of Sadhya Bhakti, devotional service on the level of perfection. Essentially the difference is just different degrees of perfection, that's all. Prema Bhakti is more perfect, although Bhava Bhakti is also basically considered perfect, beyond the level of practice and learning and trying to come up to the proper standards. It's considered the proper standard of elevated devotion.